and welcome to Tales from the Synapse, a podcast brought to you by Nature Careers in partnership with Nature Neuroscience. I'm Jean Mary Zarate, a senior editor at the journal Nature Neuroscience, and in this series, we speak to brain scientists all over the world about their life, their research, their collaborations, and the impact of their work. In episode 9, we meet a researcher at the forefront of research into olfactory loss, who is developing implants that may help patients whose sense of smell has been affected by COVID-19.
My name is Thomas Hummel. I work at the Smell and Taste Clinic at the Department of Otolaryngology of the Technical University of Dresden in Germany. So it's a subunit of the Department of Otolaryngology. Because I'm a medical doctor, I specialize in smell and taste disorders since a long time, since about 30 years. I've been working in the sense of smell. And since about 20 years, or a little bit longer, I see patients with smell and taste disorders. We are a relatively small unit, between 5 and 15 people. So we care many students, and we try to diagnose people and with olfactory loss and counsel them in terms of therapy. And we also, at the same time, apart from the clinical research that we do, because we want to see where smell and taste disorders come from and how they develop, we also do research in the physiology of the chemical senses. That includes like gustation, trigeminal sensitivity in the nose, and olfaction. So gustation is sweet, sour, salty, bitter, is the taste functionality. Trigeminal functionality is in the nose. It's like burning, biting, stinging, cooling. This is our trigeminal sensation. And olfaction, this is what we normally perceive as odors. But odors, they are typically a very complex thing. You know, many other things contribute to these percepts, and this all we try to investigate further, not just here, but also within a group of a very highly international group in the chemical senses. So I guess as soon as you start to work in the chemical senses, you're automatically connected to many other people in different countries, because there are so few people who take care about that. Different when you work in cardiovascular diseases, you just look around the corner and there's somebody who works on cardiovascular disorders. In the sense of smell, it's different. You look around the corner and there's nobody. So. I got into the area of the chemical senses with my thesis, because I started in Erlangen, which is in Bavaria in Germany, close to Nuremberg, and I was interested in the sense of smell. Actually, my wife brought me into that. I was one of her participants in one of her studies, and she was, her thesis was the first to investigate electrophysiological equivalence of the sense of smell, like looking at EEG-related compounds, and she needed subjects, and she sort of hired me, and I was one of her victims in that study, and I gladly obliged. And then I got interested in that, and my supervisor, Gerd Kobal, he was one of the pioneers in that area, and I did my thesis with him on trigeminal sensitivity, so on pain basically in the nasal cavity, and from there on also worked in a sense of smell, and so it broadened branched out in different areas. As a child, I have no background in the chemical senses. So I think I behaved like most children, so being interested in everything and nothing. But this was my interest in the sense of smell only developed later. And sort of, I think this is how life is. You know, you start something and then you make decisions. You go left or you go right, and you take a left. And next time you take a right, and in the end you end up somewhere. You know, this is what happened to me. And I always had fun doing what I'm doing, and at least I found it interesting. And I hope this would be, maybe it's also of some use to others. So that's where I come from. The The olfactory system, or the sense of smell, basically has a couple of two different pillars. One is the olfactory system. That's the perception of odors that resides in the nasal cavity, in the top of the nasal cavity, in the roof of the nasal cavity, just more or less between your eyes. So there's about 5 square centimeters up there that contain olfactory receptors, and the odor molecules that get up there, they in the nose, they make contact with these receptors. First, they have to penetrate the mucus that is on top of the mucosa. That's why it's called mucosa, because there is mucus. And they penetrate that, make contact with the receptors, and with a little bit of luck, they activate these receptors. And if there are enough of these receptors activated, this produces a sensation, because then the signals are transmitted to the olfactory bulb. That is the first relay station in the brain that is very important for olfactory processing. It's about like 12 millimeters long and about 10 millimeters thick. So it's a little sausage that's lying there. As a German, I always like to make the comparison to sausages. So, and then the odors, they activate this olfactory bulb. And if there are enough of these activations take place, then the odors, this activation is then further transmitted into other parts of the brain. What's happening at the level of the olfactory bulb is that there is a pattern is produced. So if we perceive, let's say, vanilla is not just activating one vanilla cell inside, or cell type inside the nasal cavity, but in the olfactory mucosa, in the smell epithelium, vanilla activates a couple of different receptor types. They produce a pattern, and the pattern is then transferred to the olfactory bulb. And vanilla, when we perceive vanilla, behind that is the perception of a pattern that can be overlapping with other odors, but it's a specific pattern. And this is why, when it's about olfactory coding, we have about 400 different receptor types that are developed in the olfactory epithelium. And some of them, they are activated by one odor, and some of them are activated by others. And because it's about pattern recognition, these 400 receptors, if you think about the combination of these different receptors, they can code for almost an infinite number of odors that we can, of odorants that we can perceive. Not name, but we can perceive them and possibly also differentiate them. In real life, probably we have much less odors that really matter. There's one, actually a bit of an unresolved question, how many odors do matter in our lives? And there's one estimate from a study from Munich where they looked at foods and how many odors are important in foods, and it's about 250. So surprisingly few that really are important. On the other hand, we can perceive theoretically billions of different odorants. So it's we're quite diverse when it comes to that, but in real life, possibly it's not so many odors that we need, or at least that we perceive consciously. So this was one pillar of affection. The other pillar is the trigeminal sense that's mediating. This is like innervating the trigeminal nerves. They're innervating the other parts of the nasal cavity, and they are mediating sensations like coolness or stinging or burning or pungency. That's also part of the olfactory percept. So each odor that we have, odor that we perceive, also is sort of composed of an olfactory component. That's probably the larger component, and a trigeminal component. That's a smaller part of it, but it's always in there. So when you think about cinnamon has this beautiful, deep smell of cinnamon, but at the same time, there's a slight little bit of tingling in there, in the cinnamon. And this is trigeminal sensation. When people lose the sense of smell, this can have a number of different causes. Like the most frequent cause is aging. So as we get older, our sense of smell goes down typically. Of course, there are exceptions to that, but typically we lose our sense of smell. And this is then, that's the major cause. So if you look at people older than 80, like estimates are like half of them, or at least one third of them, has no sense of smell. This loss is gradual with time, so many people do not even recognize, because it's a gradual loss. So, and you don't compare yourself to, as you age, not to, I don't compare myself not to my students, because I compare myself to my wife. So, and she's in the same age, and as we age together, so we probably, our sense of smell was much better 30 years ago, but it does not really matter, you know, as long as we're in synchrony, she's my peer group. So as long as we're in synchrony, it's all good. So this is why many people, they lose the sense of smell and they do not even recognize it. So that's one major cause. The second major cause of factor loss is cyanogenesis disease. It's chronic rhinosinusitis with and without polyps. That's a chronic inflammation, typically leads also to olfactory loss. It's a gradual loss also over months and years, and at one point it's recognized or it's not recognized. Then there are other causes like post-viral olfactory loss after viral infection, now COVID-19, which is a major driver currently of olfactory loss. It affects also younger people. Then you have post-traumatic olfactory loss after head trauma. So the stronger the head trauma, the more severe the head trauma, the more likely that you lose a sense of smell. Then you have neurodegenerative disease. So if you have Parkinson's disease or have Alzheimer's disease, like a very early sign of that is olfactory loss. And then you have numerous other causes of olfactory loss, that myasthenia gravis, or like drug-induced olfactory loss, or a couple of other causes. But the major causes are aging, chronic rhinosinusitis, it's post-viral olfactory loss, also including COVID-19, post-traumatic olfactory loss, and then neurodegenerative diseases like neurological disorders. The olfactory implant, the idea is fairly old also. I don't know when it had been first mentioned, but I think implants that have been around for a long time, and as you see, they are performed on a daily basis in the auditory system, where people receive cochlear implants, and there are also first experiments and results also on visual implants. They work quite well, or seem to be quite well working, at least in the auditory system. They are extremely helpful to many people, not to all people, but to many people. And the basic idea is that you have a sensor that is, in our case, the sensor would be in the nasal cavity. In the case of the cochlear implant, it's close to the ear. And then you sense the sound, or you sense the odor. And then in our case, the odor would activate in the sensor a certain pattern. And this pattern is then transferred to the brain. And the first relay station, we would transfer that to the olfactory bulb. There would be a wire going, or several wires going to the olfactory bulb. And in the olfactory bulb, we would produce a pattern of activation. It could be like different sides of the olfactory bulb could be activated. It could be activated with different amplitudes, or with different strengths, or with different durations. So that we produce a pattern that makes sense to the olfactory bulb, and the olfactory bulb then miraculously does something with that signal and transfers it into the brain. And the brain then does something with that signal. That's basically, it's similar things are happening in the auditory system. You have a sensor that's sort of senses the sounds, and the sounds, they are, the signal is then transferred to the brain, and the brain is doing something with this signal. And in the end, we perceive like speech, or we perceive like, when people say hello, we get a basic pattern, and our brain can make sense out of this pattern. It requires some training also, so you need to get adjust to this signal, and then after some time you can make sense of this signal, and you can understand when people greet you and say hello, or also more complex sentences, and so this could make sense. We are at the very beginning. That's a project that's funded by the European Union. A couple of other parts of the team. We are just one group within that team. There are people in Lyon, Mustafa Bensaf, he's the head of this, he's the leader of this group. Then there are people in Grenoble, and they also work on us, with us. They work on sensors, and people in Milano and in Thessaloniki and in other places. And we collaborate together and try to come up with a system that could make sense. If you want to have a meaningful olfactory implant, you want this implant to produce meaningful odorants. And in theory, it's possible. There's also first studies that indicate that we can, with electrical stimulation, we can elicit meaningful odors. There's one elegant work by Eric Holbrook from Harvard, and where he stimulated the olfactory bulb through the bone, and three out of his five patients, they had sensations. They were odor-like sensations. And this is one of the bases that encourages us to pursue this idea that with electrical stimuli, we can trigger odors, we can elicit odors in the brain. How it will pan out in the end, we do not really know, but also the parts that are needed for that system, they are available. So the sensors are there, based on the principle of that have been established with cochlear implants, could be similar implants also performed inside the nasal cavity. So they could be connected to the olfactory bulb, and there could be, we could elicit a pattern, and this pattern then might make sense to the brain, and we would be able to perceive potato chips at the end of the day. If it does not happen, if you only perceive something smoky, regardless what they present to you, like whether it's vanilla or potato chips or a piece of steak, then it would not be so useful. But that's something we will have to find out. And I think at the moment many people are quite positive that this can be something that could be helpful also in daily life. And then this would make sense.
Now that's it for this episode of Tales from the Synapse. I'm Jean-Mary Zarate, a senior editor at Nature Neuroscience. The producer was Dom Byrne. Thanks again to Professor Thomas Homo, and thank you for listening.